passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Hey, welcome back. We have reached the second hour. I don't know about you, but it's been a lot of fun today. Maybe it's just my imagination. From Yahoo Sports, Florida State was wronged by CFP, but it's not just the committee's fault. Dan Wetzel wrote that. Dan Wetzel, thanks so much for the time. By the way, Dan wrote a book many, many years ago, which was always among my favorites, Death to the BCS. I hate to ask you if you're thinking about a sequel after yesterday. Dan, good afternoon.
Probably could sell a few down the panhandle.
Yeah.
Probably could sell a few. Yeah, if I could put it out that quick. It's the problem was when they got rid of the BCS, they didn't really want to, they weren't really committed to building a good playoff. There was too many people who didn't want to do it. And so the playoff they built really hasn't been extraordinarily exciting. And it had always had this obvious problem when they said, hey, we're going to have a 4-team playoff. And you go, well, there's 5 major champions. What happens if? And they just shrugged and said, yeah, but we have to protect the Rose Bowl's kickoff time or this bowl industry, or we have to do this. And they were motivated by things other than, hey, you know, you could end up in a situation where a 13-0 Power 5 champ is out. The easiest thing to do was gone to just 6 and have three-round playoff. But they didn't want to do that because the bowl industry didn't want that. So here we are, and Seminoles are – so this is a long time coming. I don't have any problem with Alabama really getting in. I'm pretty excited for it. It's going to be really good. That's not really where my interest is, more in the process that got them to where a 13-0 team didn't make it. And I think the committee had an unenviable position, didn't have a whole lot they could go with. Someone was going to be pretty chapped today, and the one they picked was Florida State.
I understand all that. And Dan, I'll just repeat my talking points here, that I'm very sorry for Jordan Travis and for Mike Norvell, two people I admire and respect both, and very much. But I don't know about you, but I've found some of the other comments to be in the barf bag category, especially from the school president and the AD. I mean, it's the same bunch was trying to renegade the ACC a couple of months ago. And that's hard for me to I need to grow up and get that out of my head, that this is the same bunch now feigning outrage and shock and dismay over college athletics. Meanwhile, we all know the chicanery that's going on around this. And help me out here, Dan. You're a straight shooter.
Don't listen to administrators. Politicians, those are my favorite. They come out of the woodwork. All of a sudden, I like everyone's demanding a solution. Well, we're going to get one next year.
Yeah, we already have one.
So, yeah, this is unfortunate. It happened. We already have a solution. So I don't really know what you're doing.
Well, by the way, we don't have a solution for what the biggest problem in college football is right now, and that's what's going on in the portal every day.
Yeah, everyone's moving around. Yeah, what is it, 1,000 already today? Yeah, there's bigger issues than this. This is going to get solved. It's going to be. It's just, here we're at. I think my thing about it is just, they designed a system that was not good and had obvious flaws, and so this was inevitable. It was going to happen, and it happened and it took 10 years. It's a little bit amazing. Maybe it wasn't, but it did. The second part is they could have already expanded this playoff for this year, but as you mentioned, the alliance was formed, right? The SEC added Oklahoma and Texas, and just as any one of these leagues would have gladly done, because who doesn't want Oklahoma and Texas? And if the SEC had said no, Greg Sankey had said, no, we're not adding Oklahoma and Texas, then Oklahoma, Texas would be playing in the Big Ten or the ACC right now. But the SEC did it. The ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 got all up in their feelings. They were so mad at that the SEC and Greg Sankey had gotten Oklahoma and Texas that whatever Greg Sankey was proposing, they were going to oppose. It was like Washington politics, where you just one party says something, the other party says that we will take the opposite. I don't know how you're punishing the SEC by keeping the playoff small, like saying we're not going to expand. This is how we're going to punish you. We're going to vote against expansion, or we're going to delay expansion. The SEC wins this thing every year. This is working fine for the SEC, but they were so mad at Greg Sankey, that's what they did. So this could have been solved last year. So I think any of the outrage, any of the political stuff is all, yeah, it's just political theater. Florida State's players, I feel terrible for, and their coach and all of that. They were let down by a lot of administrators through a lot of years, including ones in their campus and their conference.
Dan Wetzel joining us. And I do believe, Dan, you've covered enough of these things that there is an expiration date on outrage, is there not?
I hope so.
It's usually pretty quick. Although, yeah. I mean, for those, and we don't, this is a sports show. Everyone knows that. But already today, I have seen statements from Rick Scott, I believe he's the senior senator or the junior senator. I don't really care. He's a senator from Florida. I've seen a statement from the current governor, Ron DeSantis. I've seen a statement from the former president of the United States, essentially blaming FSU not getting in on Ron DeSantis. This has moved off the sports page, has it not? Assuming you can find a sports page.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a real president. It really raises the presidential standard level issue. But what do I know? What do I know? I don't think it's any of those people. Again, this is what was coming, and this is what happened. I think the committee basically said, we're putting an SEC team in this thing. We can't have this tournament without the SEC. The SEC basically got an automatic bid. And if Georgia had won the game on Saturday, the four teams would be Georgia, Michigan, Washington, and Florida State. But because Georgia lost, they said, we got to have someone from the SEC in. They've won 13 of the last 17 titles. Four times during that period, they played each other for the title. Alabama's in. And therefore, you got to take Texas because Texas beat them head-to-head. And so they chose that route, and all of a sudden Florida State dropped out. And they said, well, it's because of the injury. If you follow their logic, it doesn't make sense. If Florida State is so bad without Travis, then they should be ranked like eighth, not fifth. I would say Georgia is better than – if we're just going by who we think would win, I think we'd say Georgia would beat them. We'd think Ohio State might, Oregon might. I'd probably rank them eighth, ninth. But we didn't do that. If Jordan Travis is so good that 13 wins are wiped out because he isn't going to be there, he should win the Heisman on Saturday. He's got to be the most valuable player in the country. I mean, what could be bigger than this? They pointed to, you know, there's all this stuff that, well, they only 55 yards. They struggled offensively against Louisville. Who cares? That was their third string quarterback who won't be in the playoff. That's immaterial. If anything, you look and go, God, look at that run game. Look at that defense. I think they knew they didn't really believe what they were saying. They were just trying to find a way to get the SEC in. This was their convenient excuse. That's really my issue more than who the heck got in. Because I kind of agree, a playoff without an SEC champ, a one-loss SEC champion would be tough. Like, you'd be like, that's not really a great playoff. So this was the problem with designing a four-team playoff with no set criteria and just a committee to make decisions. Something lousy was going to happen, and here it is.
Well, we did finally get that another one of those Big Ten SEC semifinals. We've had a few of those 2 years ago with Michigan and Georgia. We had one back in 2014. Harbaugh, we haven't mentioned him. You were on the front end of that story with the breaking news, it seems like a year ago. Do we no longer talk? I saw Jim Harbaugh interviewed yesterday. That's no longer really a conversation piece, is it? We're just moving on, right?
I mean, it's college sports. You know, it's always something new.
Always great, the one and
yes.
only.
Oh, yes,
the,
we are.
So, is Harbaugh is in all these interviews that we'll see from now until the game on New Year's Day? Is that story no longer on the table, though, Dan?
I think it's lessened. I mean, first off, all we need is more info. I mean, there's still an ongoing investigation, so who knows, right? Who knows what else comes out? It's always possible, but generally speaking, we're now, 2 months in on this thing? I think it happened in late. 2 months in, they apparently have found nothing that implicates Harbaugh or any, you know, it does not appear at this moment. It does, at this moment, we have nothing that suggests it goes high up in the staff. So I think that's, look, by the NCAA rules, you got strict liability, sure. But if, Jim Harbaugh was texting Connor Stallions, it would be a different scandal. I think just a reasonable reaction. So we don't have that. And they kept winning. And this is the thing I kept saying at the beginning. I covered Deflategate at the NFL. I covered Spygate at the NFL, all sorts of different things. Deflategate was the footballs might be deflated, and that's how Tom Brady cheated to win. And then Tom Brady just kept winning Super Bowls. And at some point, you're like, yeah, that thing really didn't matter, did it? I'm not saying this didn't matter, but when you keep winning, they're 6-0 since the scandal broke. They don't really look much different. It's hard to be just, saying this is the biggest thing in the world. I think you take a little bit of heat off of it. And I think the public gets tired and finds their next scandal. I mean, it's college sports. There's always going to be something else. So I don't think it's going to be a huge deal, but I also know that there's still an ongoing investigation, and whatever's getting investigated isn't, there's unlikely to be some exculpatory information that just the NCAA finds that goes, oh, that didn't happen. It's only, the longer it goes, really only either neutral or negative information comes out. So we will see what else is there in the ensuing month.
Well, Dan, I'm going to act like a 17-year-old here. And according to my timeline on social media, Michigan has been vindicated because they're in the playoffs.
Well, I'm sure to some they are. Just win, baby, right? Well, I mean, if you come out and lose, if they've gone 2-4 or whatever they could have gone, I guess lost all their games since, it would certainly, I think, play different. But when you keep winning, it helps. And I think Michigan, just how it works, man. These things just move on. So I don't know whether they're vindicated. There's certainly the NCAA is not done with this. And I think there'll be, further punishments and stuff for next year. But as of right now, I mean, they sat them. They tried to – Big Ten tried to even it out, put them at a disadvantage, and they went out, to the credit of the players and Sharon Moore, they went out and beat Penn State and Ohio State anyway. So I don't know. I don't know if I could – you tell me how upset people are. I think it's going to be a really interesting game against Alabama. I don't think – sign stealing is going to play a big role in it.
No, I don't think so. Hey, thank you very much, Dan Wessel. By the way, we have some breaking news. Remember last spring when Tyler Buckner transferred from Alabama to Notre Dame? Most of us thought he could very well be the starting quarterback. According to On3, Pete Nakos has learned that Buckner is in the NCAA transfer portal. But according to the On3 article, there is a twist. The man who, did he not start the South Florida game this year? Yeah. He started the South Florida game for his former coach, Tommy Reese. He is in the NCAA transfer portal as a lacrosse player. But he'll always have South Florida. We will take a short break, and we're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
I just played a clip from this morning, one of the many mindless debates that have been had since yesterday at noon. And I just want to piggyback on one of the points that was being made. Georgia, there is no system for all the fake outrage from Danny Cannell and his ilk. There is simply no justification for putting the University of Georgia as the number six best team in America. I mean, in another world, probably would have got a posse and fought hard to get them in the tournament. But it was a difficult choice because we really were playing best, most deserving, some combination of that. And Alabama beat Georgia, so they literally had to get in. But there have been countless years when Georgia would have easily gotten in. They just were unlucky. They were unlucky for a couple of reasons, that Florida State didn't get beat, or Texas. It's a legitimate conversation. This is a really good Georgia team that lost one game, and there's not a lot of desire here to go over some of the calls in that game by the officiating. That's supposedly the best crew you're going to get, isn't it? So, but there were a couple of calls that I think everybody knows and watched, and really were pretty hard to digest. That doesn't matter though. Georgia should not have put itself in a situation where it came down to a non-call or a bad call. They won the game. They won the games they were supposed to, except they didn't win the most important one, the one they needed to get into the playoffs. Cat Daddy is up next.
Big Paul, greetings and salutations during this festive time of year. And I agree with you 100% of your monologue there. But listen, there are a million stories in the capital city, and I heard about 200,000 of them today on the college football committee's thing of stubbing Florida State. Ain't had but two happy people come in here. The Lamar and Bubba, they're two boys from Alabama, and they're from Barrow Bend, Alabama, same hometown of Frank Howard of Clemson. That's how I remember who they are. They come in here today grinning like possums. Didn't say a word. I'd asked them what everybody's been asking me all day long. Y'all won on a Hail Mary pass, and Florida State wins with a third-string quarterback, and y'all don't think Florida State deserves to be in there? They just grinned like possums and walked on out the door. But that's been the premise of most people, Mr. Feinbaum. You take an 18, 19-year-old kid like a Florida State player, and you tell him, son, your quarterback's hurt, so you probably ain't got a chance to win, so you can't play in this playoff. However, they won with a third-string quarterback. What a great story it would have been if Florida State had been allowed in and then won the whole championship with a third-string quarterback.
Yeah, you know what, Cat Daddy, are you still at work?
No, sir, I'm home.
Well, for you to make that statement, you must have been drinking the moonshine today as opposed to trying to sell it.
No, sir.
There ain't no way on any earth that Florida State was going to win it one game, let alone two games in this tournament.
And how do we know that, Mr. Feinbaum?
Because I do know that. There are some things you know. And I watched them play against Florida and against Louisville, one average team, one slightly better than average team, and they could barely score a point. Put them up against a defense like Michigan or Alabama or Texas or Washington, and it would have been laughable. But thanks for trying. I do appreciate it. Bubba is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Bubba.
We're shaking, Paul. Randy. Hey, let me tell you what the committee did, Paul. They did all that they could do. They did the only option they had is to go with the four teams they picked. Number one, they're counting on Georgia stomping Florida State in their bowl game. So that will exonerate them on leaving them out. But you can't sit here and tell me, I don't think Michigan could beat Georgia. I don't think Washington could beat Ohio State. I still don't think we have the four best teams in the country. Georgia really got slighted worse than Florida State because they're capable of winning it all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they would, but I'm saying they're capable of it.
Ohio State, I think I don't think Ohio State could have won it all, based on what I saw from them. But there's
no but do you think Washington could beat them?
No.
Do you think Michigan could beat Georgia?
No.
No, and they do, but they could not have Georgia with one loss and Alabama with one loss in the top four. The college football would have exploded.
I've said this ad infinitum today, but I just can't help saying it. The Florida State wasn't that great. They really weren't. They were not great without their best player. Just like I don't think Alabama would have been a threat without Jalen Milroe.
Absolutely not. Jalen Milroe developed into the player that he is. And honestly, if Alabama and Georgia played four Saturdays from now, I'm not so sure Georgia wouldn't beat them.
No,
I mean, you can't tell me McConkey and Bowers were
100%. I know Alabama's happy not to see Georgia again. But for whatever reason, on that stage, and you can do all the psychology you want, Alabama just seems to have something over Georgia. And
absolutely. And yeah. I've got to give kudos. What does I-Man call them? The Bammers. I want to congratulate the Bammers because.
Well, I forgot
that Alabama
about
football
I-Man.
Team.
I wonder if he and
that Alabama
and
football team from the beginning of the season, they have came a long way as a football squad.
Hey, let me tell you a quick story before we go to break. You ever said, man, that was the longest lunch I've ever had in my life. About 9 years ago, I had a book signing in Columbus, Georgia. And it was not really much of a book. I mean, I was supposed to be in Montgomery and Auburn, and this guy in New York said, let's put you in Columbus for a book signing. I'm like going, bad idea. But I did it like at 10 o'clock in the morning at some mall. And afterwards, I had a little bit of time before I'd get to the next book signing in Auburn. So I had lunch with, ready for this? I-Man and Daryl. I-Man and Daryl. It's not like I've had a lot of lunches with people and they're nice and you forget it 3 days later. 9 years later, I still remember that. And given the choice now of having lunch with them or swallowing a cyanide capsule, I may have taken the cyanide capsule. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back. We'll continue with more of your phone calls. And Randy is up next. Hello, Randy. And here, Randy, we'll try Jacob. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to talk about the college football playoff situation and with putting Alabama in. I mean, the way I see it, like, if you put Alabama in over Florida State because we're choosing the best teams here, Florida State was undefeated, I don't see why Georgia shouldn't go in over Washington. Because, I mean, Washington's undefeated, but the SEC is different. And Alabama only won by 3, and the game could have gone either way. So I wanted to see what you thought about Georgia not getting in.
Well, Jacob, I think it's a good argument. But what happens in these situations is we get hung up on narratives that somehow get created. And, you know, for all the rhetoric about this committee, they voted like a committee. And committees take a little bit from here and a little bit from there. And you know, maybe there was one guy on the committee who was fighting to get Alabama in over Florida State and to compromise to make sure he got that accomplished, he may have backed away from Georgia. So, and Georgia, unfortunately for them, picked the worst day of the year, not only to lose, but to not look like it the same team that we had seen all year long. And
yeah,
I wonder, too, and I don't think it was a factor, but I would have really liked to have seen Georgia play Oklahoma because I think it would have – maybe somebody in that room would have said, you know what, I really liked what I saw there. Instead, Georgia – it was dominant against Tennessee, but – Tennessee faltered down the stretch. It struggled against Missouri for a while. It just, it really, I think Georgia got penalized for a completely meaningless game against Georgia Tech where Kirby Smart rested some of his players. Now, I'll raise one more question, and I don't know the answer to this, but did Georgia really need to bring Brock Bowers back when it did? And initially when he got hurt at the Vanderbilt game, the talk was, let's save him for the SEC championship game. Did Brock Bowers affect any of the games that he played in a significant way? Was he necessary against Missouri or Ole Miss? What if Kirby Smart had held him back for that one game? Would it have been different? I mean, he was good at times against Alabama, but clearly he was banged up. I mean, we were on the field right before the game doing our show, and he looked pretty good, but as the game wore on, I think the results spoke for themselves. James is back, and James is up next in Auburn, Alabama.
Good afternoon, Paul. Roll Tide.
Hey there.
Hey, a quick question. I know back in 2009, when Alabama played Texas and Pasadena, I'm not sure what company it was, they had offered where you could buy a piece of the end zone, if you recall that.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Is that something they'll do again, or is that just like a one-off thing?
Well,
I
don't know. They changed the field a lot, so that may have been part of it. I don't know if they'll do that for this. That was also the final game of the year. I assume this will be – I can't imagine what else would be happening at the Rose Bowl. But I have no idea. I'll see if we can try to get you an answer on that. Patrick is up next. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Paul. So I was just wondering, with the committee taking Alabama over Florida State based on one player, do you think this will have any impact in the 12-team playoff and the future of the playoff and how the committee selects their teams? Because by the way that it seems, Jordan Travis is the best player in college football if he's that impactful to Florida State.
I think every year is a different situation. One year can affect, and I was with Stephen A. earlier, and I was somewhat joking that his rant about TCU last week may have impacted people, but it did create a narrative, and I think that's important. And so TCU may have affected this year, and next year won't matter very much though, because what we'll be debating next year are really, there'll be a big debate about the first four. Or the how many get byes next year? The first two or the first four? I'm trying to. So the top four. That's where the big debate will be. Will this team or that team, do they deserve a bye? And then finally the bottom of it. I don't think the bottom is going to be particularly compelling. Where would the debate have been this year among which we're talking about? It's not necessarily number 13 because that's not how they'll do it. But we would be talking about three lost teams. I mean, LSU might have been in the conversation next year for do they get in. Would Ole Miss have gotten in this year? I'm trying to remember. You'd have a conversation about Ole Miss versus somebody else. I mean, I don't think there'll be particularly compelling debates unless you're one of those on the cut line. Steve is up next in Macon, Georgia. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing great.
First off, I just want to tip my houndstooth hat to Alabama. I've been a Georgia fan since 1960. I thought that was a great ball game. I thought the Washington-Oregon game was great. The other three absolutely were terrible. Iowa may have the worst offense I have ever seen. But getting back, it's kind of ironic. You know what the stadium they played in Atlanta's called?
The Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah, did you see where Nick Saban's group bought two auto dealerships down in Miami 2 weeks ago for $750 million?
Yeah.
So he pretty much owns that place.
I'm wondering if Nick Saban isn't more interested in being a hedge fund manager than the coach at Alabama with all the deals he has going.
Well, I think being in the auto business kind of is better than being in a hedge fund.
Well, he picked a good time to go in automotive.
No, he absolutely did. But what were your just thoughts on that game? I thought it was very evenly matched. I think Alabama ought to be glad we were number one. We go from 1 to 6. They go from 4 to 8. And to me, that was the national championship I saw Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. After the first drive, I thought Georgia was in a position maybe to be dominant. And we'll talk to Terrion Arnold here in a few minutes, and we'll certainly let him tell you how the Alabama defense prepared.
Well, I think they beat us at the line of scrimmage. I think you're right about Brock Bowers wasn't 100%, but Alabama took him out of the game. They had him bracketed.
Well, they did, but
about the whole.
I think there was a reluctance, though, by Carson Beck I think Carson Beck was not – it was not the same Beck to Bowers that we saw, let's say, in the Auburn game. And those are minor things, but they also – play a big role. And I don't want to be a cliche machine here, Steve, but when you have great teams, and these are two great teams, it comes down to a handful of plays. The end of the second half, was that the right call or not? Was that a catch, a missed field goal when momentum changes, a stop on third down? I mean, these are the most prosaic things you could talk about, but Alabama made the plays. Georgia didn't. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back, and we got Terry and Arnold coming up here in just a few minutes. Let's check in with Jake, who is in Georgia. Hello, Jake.
What's going on, Mr. Feinbaum?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I just wanted to call and bring something to the attention of legends. From last year, whenever Georgia barely beat Ohio State in Peach Bowl, he called in the next day and he said, you know, as a lifelong Orioles fan, his granddad told him it takes three things to win a championship: good players, good coaches, and a little bit of luck. And it seems like that luck is on the side of the Crimson Tide this year. What you think?
Yeah, no, I don't. Well, there's no way to dispute that. We can talk all we want about how great the Milroe to Bond play was, and it was. It took enormous talent, but the luck of getting to that point, you know, the muff punt, countless other moments in that game factored in. And by the way, I mean, Alabama had 4 or 5 games. The A&M, even the Tennessee game that where they were down double digits, a couple other games that were about to finish them off, you know, the Daniels injury by Dallas Turner. Alabama, I don't remember a charm season, and then the worst thing that happened to Alabama turned out to be the best thing, and that was losing to Texas. Because had they not lost to Texas, that was a high-quality loss. And they got, I mean, they could have been upset by Arkansas. They could have lost to A&M. One of those losses would have finished them off.
I agree.
They ended up with a combination of the best win of the year in college football and the best loss. This is convoluted, what I'm about to say, but they beat the number one team on the field, and then they lost to the number three team. And that's a remarkable combination. Nobody else, if you're playing that type of poker, could match them, especially especially Georgia, which ended up losing to them, and Florida State, which we have beaten to death over again. Bobby is in North Carolina. Hello, Bobby.
Hello, Paul. How you doing today?
We are doing well. Thank you.
I'm not a pull for any certain team. I pull for SEC football. I love it.
Yes, sir.
But I am a fan of Nick Saban. And not only has he brought this team back this year, he's resurrected the career of other coaches. Where do you think Steve Sarkisian would be today without Nick Saban?
Well, I'll simply relate a question that I asked Nick Saban on September 9th. I asked him, as we stood out there during our Saturday morning show, about some comments that Sarkisian had made earlier in the week, where he said I would not be here without Nick Saban. And Saban got very emotional talking about it and how much he cared for Sarkisian. And I'll offer this. I was on the sideline with Sarkisian in Tampa a week after Lane Kiffin was fired. And he was not ready for that moment. He was very shaky. And I think some of the calls he made in that game aided and abetted Clemson winning the national championship. But he got through it. He had some moments that have never been discussed at Alabama that Nick Saban helped him with. And Nick Saban has done that for other people throughout his career. But I think that might be, of all the, you know, the rehab stories that we joke about, the most important of his career. And we've got a reasonable chance of seeing a rematch in a couple of weeks.
That's right. He might wind up playing him. Okay, thank you, Paul.
Advice to Sark, you do not want to meet Saban in a rematch. I promise you that. Clem is up next in Georgia. Hello, Clem.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Well, thank you.
Just wanted to say real quick that Jermaine Burton is a flat-out punk for that little charade he pulled in the Georgia end zone. Did you see that?
I saw it.
Yeah, I just thought that was just totally classless, unnecessary, you know, to just disgrace your former team like that and people that have put time and invested in you. What a classless little punk.
Well, Clem, listen, I understand the frustration. Jermaine Burton, to me, is someone who made a risky decision. He walked away from a national championship. He's ended up being a dynamic contributor to Alabama. And I don't want to go he didn't do anything other than act like a young person. And I would not have endorsed it. I would not have recommended it. I would not have told him to ever do anything like that. I think the ultimate character is sometimes revealed, but I'm also not that upset about it. And you're welcome to be upset. You're welcome to spend a lot of energy and angst on something that is not relevant whatsoever at the end of the day. So we will end this conversation with a disagreement. We will talk to one of Jermaine Burton's teammates coming up here in a minute. Terrion Arnold joining us in our next segment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.